Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, live from the Allstate Skyline Studios at 303 East Wacker. I know that if you've been listening for the last week to WGN, you probably heard more than enough about our new studios, but for all of us in here for the first time, it's quite an experience. They're beautiful, new, everything's brand new. Weirdest thing is we're standing. We can sit, but they have everything at standing level, which I've never done before. I've never stood for a show, so I'm going to do this for a little bit. But we normally don't kick in a guest right away, but joining us in studio right now is our good friend Troy LaRavier, and I got to figure out which microphone you're on. Hey, Troy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Hey, you picked the right one.
Yeah, the first guest there. Thanks for coming down. We really appreciate
it. Hey, thanks for having me, man. You are one of the few people on the planet who could get me to come to a radio show at 1 a.m.
I was going to say, is it frustrating for you that like our morning host Steve Cochran has Ram on all the time, and here at 1 a.m. I'm inviting you to come in? But that's kind of the state of where we're at right now, isn't it? Because Ram's got a war chest that's probably thicker than I don't know what. Mm-hmm. And I imagine you are working every day because you just don't have the donations coming in at right. that level, right? I mean, this is more of a grassroots campaign that you've got going.
Right. I don't feel a lot of frustration. I feel like I'm doing what I was put on this earth to do, and these are the trials and tribulations that were put before me to overcome, and I'll walk through them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's the campaign going? How long has it been since you announced you're officially a candidate?
Well, it depends on when you count what you count as an announcement. I've been, you know, I wasn't like a lot of the other candidates who were sort of like, you know, playing coy and then trying to have an official announcement date. From the first time a reporter asked me if I was going to run, I just said I was going to run, and it made news. Yeah. Even though it wasn't like the announcement.
See, I just said it was. I would ask you. You'd say, I don't know, I'm thinking about
because
it.
Because I hadn't made it. I had made the right. decision. But right. from the point I had made, because these folks knew they were going to run, right?
Right.
But I did. But the moment I decided it, I didn't wait for some big moment or some big event. I just answered a random reporter's questions.
Well, with the other ones that you say knew they were going to do it, they probably knew they wanted to do it, but they were weighing, do I have the support? Is it worthwhile? Weighed everything else. I'm guessing you made it a little more from the heart, as I want to really try and do this, whether or not anybody says it's
exactly.
going to happen or not.
Exactly.
Right?
We needed a person centered on the interests of working people in this race, and there was no one in sight. And so I decided to give working people a choice. By entering the race. Now, if someone else who's a progressive, you know, I'm a Bernie Sanders kind of guy.
Right.
You know, I want to run the kind of campaign in this city that he ran for the country. I want to bring up the kind of issues that he brought up for the country in the city. And I didn't see anyone like that.
Yeah.
If someone else like that gets in, the more the merrier. People often ask me about, you know, how do you feel about all these people being in the race? And my response is always, that's democracy. I don't see it as a bad thing.
Do you worry with some of the people in the race? I know there's concern at times that people run in a race just to help negate other people.
I'm certain that's happening. I think it's highly likely, I should say, that it's happening. Can you prove it? You know, no.
Sure.
But we know Rahm. We know he's a political. He doesn't know how to run a city, but he knows how to run a campaign. he is incompetent in running the city. But he is extremely competent in winning elections, and it's because he'll do anything to win one. Did you see what Bill Reuther tweeted out today in relationship to Rahm's announcement? So Rahm just announced this, you know, fake program to try and this token program to try and help to create a couple hundred affordable housing units when the need is for 10,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out the Tribune was releasing a story today about just how inept he's been at creating affordable housing. And you know, when the Tribune does a story on you, they typically run it by you. You know,
right.
did we get this right? They give you a chance to respond. And so since he knew the story was coming out, all of a sudden there was this big announcement, this affordable housing announcement, to deaden the impact of their story about just how incompetent he's been.
Yeah.
And so that point being, the man knows what to do to try and impact public opinion so that he can get votes, how to raise money to get votes, and how to put people into elections to be spoilers. I don't put that past him at all. In order to get votes, or in order to take away votes from his most potent challenges, so
which somewhat is probably not different from most career politicians, right?
I would say that you are probably on to something.
Yeah,
Probably not much different from most anti-democratic, corrupt politicians. And we have quite a few of those in our country.
Now, how are you going to make sure that doesn't end up being you? If you get elected, because that's got to be the tough part. And you know, I don't know if you know Pat Quinn at all. Mm-hmm. I know Pat Quinn because I used to produce the John Williams show here, and he was lieutenant governor at the time. And he used to come in all the time as lieutenant governor. And I loved the man. He founded the Citizens Utility Board. And as a lieutenant governor, when we took calls, he'd write notes. He'd take people's numbers. He was always going to the military funerals. I thought he was doing great things. I was really excited for him as governor. Political insiders I know through guests here at WGN have told me that Pat Quinn was, you know, running patronage and corruption, and just they talk against people that I respect, talk very badly of how he ran when he was governor and what he did as governor. And it frustrated the hell out of me. And it makes me think, I wonder how many politicians who have a good heart and have good thoughts on everything they want to do get there and then learn that, well, if you're going to get this done, you got to make this sacrifice, and you have to start chipping away at what you really got there for if you're ever going to get things done.
Yeah, there's no way in hell I'm doing that. And I'll give you two lines of thought. It's certainly possible for anyone. The first thing you have to go into knowing is it's possible for, no matter how corruption proof you think you are, you have to know it's possible. That power itself corrupts. And so you have to bring in people and make alliances with the people you represent so that they can come in and keep you honest. But the other part is that I've already had many opportunities to sell out.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a difference between power corrupting people and being bought, right? One thing I know is that I cannot be bought, period. Mm-hmm. Power can certainly corrupt anyone, but I've had my opportunities. For folks who don't know, you know, I was the principal of the number one neighborhood school in Chicago,
Blaine Elementary.
And I became quite well known because I was the only principal in Chicago to criticize and highlight the corruption and incompetence of the Emanuel administration as a sitting principal of one of the best schools in the city. When that happened, I began to get quite a bit of notoriety, and Emanuel noticed. And because I was a principal in Lakeview at Blaine, you know, there were quite a few wealthy parents. Many of my children's parents were wealthy, politically connected right. people, and some were in the Clinton administration with Rahm, and the Obama administration with Rahm. And I won't mention a name, but one was sent to me. And he asked the question, plain and simple. He let me know he was there as an emissary, that there was...
What's it going to take to get you right, to take your foot off the gas here?
He said, what do you need? Right. In order to stop, what is it that you need?
Yeah.
And I said, what I need is for the mayor to stop undermining and sabotaging our school system. That is what I need.
So the question I would have for you then in that situation is, so if he would have said, listen, school CEO is going to be outgoing, we need a new school CEO. If he offered you that as a way to keep his enemies closer, that would have been tough, because you know that if you get in there, you'd have this power to make great change, but you'd also be within the system that you probably could only change so much. So how does that balance out? Like, if he said, hey, how about you become school CEO and we'll let you, you know, fight for what you really think you can get done here, what would you have done?
So there are two answers to that question. Both of them I know, but there are two lines of thought behind the no. Number one, the school CEO in Chicago Public Schools has absolutely no power. The CEO, the chief executive officer of Chicago Public Schools, does not run Chicago Public Schools. They are highly well-paid spokespeople for the mayor's office and the mayor's education agenda. They don't actually have a day-to-day functioning operation, an independent one, other than to do what the mayor tells them to do. Their job is to meet with the mayor's office, memorize their talking points, and get out there and repeat those talking points to anyone who's going to listen.
Now, that's not the job of the CEO. That's not the official job description, but you're saying that's what it's become.
That's
right?
What it is under this mayor.
Okay.
That is what it is. You go back all the way to Jean-Claude Brossard, and then Barbara Bird Bennett after him, and then Jesse Ruiz for a couple of weeks, and then Forrest Claypool for a year or two, and now Janice Jackson. And think about Like, any principal can take. There's been no actual education initiative. Nothing actually having to do with curriculum and instruction. Everything that comes from them is some kind of press-friendly initiative that's announced by the mayor's office. And then they push it. And the other thing they do is to justify school closures, to justify the inept, incompetent borrowing. You know, whatever the mayor's office does, they are spokespeople. That's their job. Even in this sexual abuse scandal.
Do you believe so? They're going to be team players, and they're going to put the best foot forward for the image of the mayor's office.
Which is why I could not take that job. Getting back to your question,
well, yeah, you would have been fired very quickly from that.
Which is why I can't be his spokesperson.
But would it have been an opportunity to fight for change, or do you think it's just a rubber stamp and they're not even part of the decision making process? They don't have the opportunity to fight
absolutely.
For what's right.
Absolutely not. They are not. I can guarantee that the decision making happens with the mayor's team.
So I'm going to assume that under a LaRavier mayoralship, that would change.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to, like, when you're corrupt, it breeds incompetence. It breeds it. Because the people you have to do your education agenda are people who want to bleed the system dry of every dime they possibly can. And so if that is your agenda, then your education policy is going to end up looking incompetent. Because it's not going to have much to do with education. One of my major planks is evidence, reason, and research. That's how we made Blaine the number one elementary school in Chicago. It was already a good school when I got there. It was in the top 10. It was number one when we left. We had 79% of kids meeting standards when I got there. We had 89 when I left. We won 3 straight merit awards for student growth, not just for having high performance, but for that performance increasing year after year after year under our leadership. But all of that came about not because I'm some great innovative principal. I'm not. I know how to look at research. I know how to interview people and find people who know what the hell they're doing, who understand education, who know curriculum, who know instruction, who know climate, who know culture, and bring them in to do a good job. And so as the head of the district, or as the person responsible for running the district, which is what the mayor's office is, I would take that same approach and a philosophy into bringing good people who know what they're doing, who know the research, who have a good track record, and to implement evidence-based research practices to guide our district.
I imagine you would kind of take that model and apply it to everything you do as mayor.
Exactly. One of the things that, there are 4 things that I think any mayor should have. One is a track record of any actually public official, period, particularly an executive public official like a mayor, a governor, or a president, or Cook County Board Chair, that you have to have, number one, a record of responsible management of public money. That's number one, right? No matter what institution, whether you were the head of the police department, a school, an agency, could you manage money responsibly? People act as if you have to have some magic mojo to handle the city budget. The mathematics that it takes to do the budget of this city is the same mathematics that it took to do the budget that I had at Blaine Elementary School, and it's the same mathematics that you use to do your budget at your kitchen table. It is addition and subtraction. You just need to be responsible with it and make sure your expenses and your revenue match.
But that's the issue. And for most of us at our kitchen table, they're not matching, right? We have credit card debt. We have home equity loans. We do the same things the city does. The city's done it to a point where it's really, you know, making everything suffer, like a lot of us Americans do too much of, right? How would you make those tough decisions when you say revenue is not going to meet? It's either raise taxes or cut programs. How are you going to handle that?
It's actually more than raise taxes or cut program. It's how do we, Dick Simpson, University of Illinois at Chicago, former alderman, political science professor, he estimates that we spend, and it's a conservative estimate because he only goes with what he can prove, Right? So he's not going with the billions of dollars in corrupt loans that Emmanuel has taken out. But he estimates, just on what he can prove, that we spend $500 million per year as taxpayers in corruption. That's our corruption tax. We have to get corruption out of government. I can't bring myself to talk to taxpayers about increasing their contribution unless I can assure them that we've gotten corruption and waste out of the system. I talked to, when I was at Blaine, and again, there's wealthy parents then. I remember talking to one of them. He's a finance guy. He does the trades and the stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Loaded. And he said, you know, I wouldn't mind paying more to make sure our schools and our public services, you know, are up to par. But I don't want to pay more into a system that's corrupt, that's going to waste right. my money. And so my first response to that question has to be that we have to take concrete, measurable steps to make government open, make it transparent, and to insulate it as much as possible from the influence of corruption. Only then can we then start talking about revenue. If we need additional revenue after that, and I think every expert and economist and observer says we're going to, if we're going to handle the debt that this mayor and the previous one have built up for us to pay. And so at that point, we say, not just, you know, do we tax, but it's who, where, like right now, the mayor taxes working people and poor people. He taxes them with regressive fees. He taxes them with regressive parking red light tickets and speeding tickets. He taxes them with fines and fees on their cable bills and their gas bills, right? He fines every way. And of course, he taxes working people through property taxes. And another thing that we have to remember about this mayor before we go on is that during the last election, if you watch the debates between him and Chuy Garcia, the moderator would always ask the question about taxes. Same question you're asking me now. And his answer was always, he'd talk about the state and pushing for progressive revenue, progressive income tax. He talked about expanding the sales tax to include services. He even had examples ready to show why this might be a good thing. He talked mm-hmm. about a casino. He even talked a little bit about possibly using TIFs, which he certainly didn't want to do. But it's an election year, so it was a talking point. What did he do as soon as he got back safely into office? He didn't make one iota of effort to get the state to pass progressive revenue. He didn't make one iota of effort to get the state to expand sales taxes. Didn't use any of his political capital on it. He went straight for your property taxes and more regressive fees. And so we know how he's going to do that based on his history. What I'm going to say is, before we go, we can't put anything off the table. But property taxes and regressive fees will be the last thing on the table. We are actually going to make an effort to get the state to pass progressive revenue. We are actually going to make an effort to expand the sales tax to include services. We don't even have to make an effort. We can spend our TIF dollars more wisely and funnel some of that money or direct some of that money into schools where it was supposed to go in the first place. And so if we have to get to property taxes under my administration, you know, they will be far less than they would be under his, because we're actually going to try and get as much as possible from other sources before I can, and we're also going to end the corruption tax that we pay before I can even come to you with a straight face
yeah.
and ask you for something more in property tax.
Troy LaRavier is in studio. He's running for mayor of Chicago. TroyForChicago.com is the website.
Yeah,
TroyForChicago.com to learn more. If you have a question for Troy, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break, do the news with Roger, and then more with Troy LaRavier here in studio on 720 WGN. Thank you, Roger. Mike Wabala here with you, 720 WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studios with Troy LaRavier. He is running for mayor of your city of Chicago. 312-981-7200 is the number if you want to call and say hi or ask a question. 312 says, I wish I still lived in the city and could vote for Troy. Best of luck to him from this Blaine alum.
Hey.
So there you go.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk a little bit more about the progressive tax. You mentioned that you want to figure out a system, and when you talk about you want to run a Bernie Sanders type campaign, there, you know, within the Democratic Party, there is liberal and there is very liberal, which gets into more DSA type stuff and socialism and things like that. How liberal are we talking of a campaign? And when we talk about progressive tax here in Illinois, what are we talking about trying to create?
So I don't even know how to approach a question of how liberal. I don't like to think of myself. I don't even like using the term progressive sometimes. I'm for working people, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that people who share my views typically call themselves progressives. I don't agree with everything that someone calls themselves a progressive says, but people who share my views typically call themselves that. I'm certain, you know, Rahm's also a Democrat, and he's not liberal. And he's not. The other difference we have to look at is people who are fundamentally conservative or basically right-wing in their economic policies, who mask as liberals because of their social policies. There's not much of a difference in Rahm's economic policy than there is in the average Republican, right? But he will come out for gay rights, or he will give lip service to some liberal social policies. But his basic economic policies for working people are no different than, I would say, Bruce Rauner, much different than Bruce Rauner's. And so that's another wing of the Democratic Party that people like me have a problem with. You know, you can't, you know, people who try to call themselves liberals or progressives because of their social stances, while their bread and butter economic stances hurt working people every single day. In terms of a progressive income tax, the basic theory behind this is that those who have more pay more. You know, we have to do a lot of work in figuring out what that actually means in terms of who gets taxed at what percentage. I've heard folks talk about, you know, people who make under a certain amount being taxed at the current rate, and then folks who make more than that at different levels being taxed at higher rates, up to 10% for the highest. But we have to actually look at what our needs are, not just throughout the city, but it's a state tax.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of work that needs to go into figuring out what that looks like. But the basic, you know, there's a passage in the New Testament. You know, I'm not a big sort of religious person, but I do like this passage because it makes the point where Jesus is with his disciples, and they're watching people put money into the church, the donation. I don't know what they call it, but whatever that receptacle is that takes the donation, they put money into it. And they're watching the wealthy go by and just put vast sums and riches into the collection plate or the collection box. And then this poor widow comes by, and she puts 2 copper coins in. And Jesus asks his disciples, who put the most in? And of course, his answer is that the widow put the most in, because those 2 copper coins were not extra for her. They came from what she needs for her basic sustenance. Right? Everyone else was throwing in things that were excess. They weren't using those for they could live without that much. Even though they were a lot more, they could live without it. Right? They were giving from their excess. She gave from her basic needs, right? And so that basic point he was making is the spirit behind the progressive income tax, that you have working people and poor people, particularly working people in this country, who are paying, right? They're paying, the money they pay in taxes comes from things that they actually need to live. The money that the wealthy pay in taxes comes from their excess. And in that spirit, what they pay is actually less, if you follow the spirit through, and that they should be, they should contribute more.
So we just want to, you're looking at it mirroring more of a federal system where it's graduated. The more you make, the more you pay into the system.
Right.
Basically, right? And it's funny because we always hear the big national argument for a flat tax, not on the Democrat side, of course, but on the Republican side. What is the tax rate in Illinois right now?
I want to say 4.5.
And statewide, is there much support for a graduated tax in Illinois?
I think there's a lot of support.
I would think it would help the state because so much of the population is here within Chicago. I could see Chicago being more against it than outside of Chicago. I guess the suburbs have a lot of the wealth, but
I think, you know, people will be against it depending upon, one, how politically, I mean, you know, where they stand along the lines of the lines you were talking about earlier in terms of conservative and progressive, and how much they're influenced by the talking points of the people who are either for it or against it.
Well, I think it also goes back to something you said earlier about one of your one of the people at Blaine when you were the principal mm-hmm. there, who said, I'd be willing to pay more money if I knew it was going to go the right way.
Right.
And I would imagine that here in the state of Illinois, it'd be tough for us to say, yes, let's get that progressive tax because we know you guys will just fix all the problems with it.
Right. The state is just as corrupt as the city is. I mean, the state, there's a book called Crook County. So at every level of government, we have corruption. And so, again, we have to make that same argument for the progressive income tax in terms of, before we ask you for this, the reforms that I talked about at a city level have to be put there at a state level. I remember I was just testifying before the state about a month ago on behalf of special education students. And I was talking about the research that, you know, I'm the president of the Principals Association. The research our association did in relationship to CPS delaying and denying services to special ed kids. And we've been on this for 2 years. And finally, we were able to create a coalition or join a coalition of parents and advocates that got the state to come in and intervene. And they basically took over CPS's special education program. They have a state, I don't know if you've heard about this, but they have a state mm-hmm. monitor over CPS's special education program as a result of the work of this coalition, which we were part of. And so I'm testifying before the state education committee, and they're asking me, what do we need to do to stop this, right? And so I talk about some basic special ed policies, but I say the number one thing, and I have this lobbyist who's working with me because we're trying to pass legislation at the state level to prevent them from doing this to kids again. And my lobbyist told me, you know, this is what I told her what I might want to say. But when he asked me that question, I came up with something else that me and my lobbyist didn't talk about. And I said, you know, the thing that we really need to do to make this, to stop this, prevent this kind of abuse of students or neglect of students in the future, is campaign finance reform. Because they're delaying and denying these services to students so that they can redirect the money that would have been used to pay for those services to their campaign donors. You know, we have Aramark Sodexo, a company that's leaving our schools filthy, that's getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars to manage custodians. Oh, and guess what? They just happened to be a campaign donor to the mayor, gave him $250,000 and then got several hundred millions of dollars in our tax dollars to keep our schools filthy, right? That's the MO. The Chicago Tribune had a front page article in 2015, and then they redid the research in 2017 and showed nothing had changed. 60 of the mayor's top 100 campaign donors all got some kind of benefit from the city in the form of an appointment or our tax dollars or a contract. 60 of his top 100 donors. He meets with them. They looked at his schedule and they did an analysis of his schedule. And he spends more than half his days meeting with his campaign donors. And they actually tracked donations that came after meetings. Donations and contracts that came after these meetings, right? And so you can't redirect public money toward your campaign donors if you're still spending it on the people it's supposed to be spent on. And so this special education issue at its root You know, they're denying the services so that they don't want to, because they don't want to spend money on the services, because that's the money they need to redirect to their campaign donors. And so I say this, getting back to your question, I say this to the state legislators.
And your lobbyist is behind you just shaking his head.
Right,
going,
my lobbyist is behind me like,
this is not the talking points.
Troy, stick to the script. I don't know if you want to be talking to state legislators who you want to pass. You want this, to pass this legislation, the special education legislation, and introducing this, you know, red herring of campaign finance reform. But it is my honest belief. It's my sincere belief that corruption is at the root of most of our problems in city government and state government and county government.
I don't think many people would probably argue with that, just living in the state for as long as we have and watching the lottery, watching the toll system, everything that's promised and then not delivered on, right? I mean, it happens over and over again in the state and in the city. Red light cameras, selling of the Skyway. I mean, we could go on and on and on with questionable decisions that have been made here in the state, and governors going to jail. I mean, there's a lot there. How do you... Troy, you've got a lot of great ideas, and you've got passion, and I wholeheartedly believe in you. How do you turn this into an actual, I mean, Rahm has all the money, Rahm has all the clout, Rahm has all these people giving him all this money. If you're vowing that I'm not going to take any money from somebody who I might be having to give contracts to or dealing with, how do you turn this grassroots effort into an actual campaign when you've got, how many people are running, 6, 8, 22?
10.
Jesus, there's 10 people running.
Including the mayor, yes.
Including the mayor. And so you guys are all just going to cannibalize each other is the hope, and he's going to run ad after ad after ad, touting all the great, wonderful things he's doing for the city of Chicago, and then apathy wins out, and he gets reelected mayor. How do you change that?
So, you know, I was part of the Bernie Sanders campaign. I filmed 2 commercials for Bernie. And I attended as many of those rallies as possible. And I remember this talking point of his. And he made it repeatedly. Yeah. That, you know, he talked about all the things he wanted to do. You know, in corruption. Free college. Or, you know, free college tuition. And everything, all the other things. And he'd always end it by saying, I can't do any of this alone. In order to create the kind of country that we've been talking about, that we need, millions of people have to stand up and say enough is enough. Right? That there has to be a movement. In order to counter organized money, we have to counter it with the power of organized people. And I believe the same thing that he said is necessary on national level is necessary at a local level. That we have to create this kind of movement. And the other part of the Bernie, you know, Bernie's not the be all end all, but he is some lessons from that campaign, because he almost beat the vaunted Clinton machine, right? Coming out of nowhere.
Right.
And I'll never forget the first time I saw him. I was invited. I'd never heard of the man, or sort of barely heard of him, like there's some super liberal from the Northeast. I didn't know much about the guy. And he was doing a talk at the Park West. And a friend of mine from the Chewy campaign invited me to the talk. So I came, and I get there, and there's a line around the block for this man I've never heard of. And I listened to his message. And it was so focused on the needs of working people. There was this honest analysis, and it was so just elegant. It was, we have a corrupt economy, right? No, a rigged economy. We have this rigged economy that funnels wealth to the wealthiest, the people who already have more than they could spend in their lifetimes, at the expense of people who don't have enough to last until the end of the month. This rigged economy. And then the people who benefit from that rigged economy then take that money and use it to corrupt our political system, to make it difficult for us to make the changes that we need. And then he would go and show how that analysis applied to just about every single aspect of American government and American life in terms of the things that we need to change, from healthcare to job creation to education. And he went across the country and barnstormed with that message, right? And it was so on point that, right, he created a movement with that message. And I think that here in Chicago, we have to have build a campaign that has a message that is clear, that is singularly focused on root causes and solutions to those root causes in a way that's designed to make the statement and make the point that the goal of this campaign is to raise the standard of living for working people in a way that allows everyone in the city to realize their potential. We can't build that movement. That movement doesn't exist right now. There are many people out there in different organizations across the city that have been fighting in their little area that they want to see change in, from affordable housing to healthcare to police reform to violence. But there isn't yet a movement that sort of coalesced to bring all this energy and push it in the same direction. And so what I have to do, and what my job is to create, work with these folks to create a message that helps them to see, or helps that creates a message in a campaign that says, this is something we can all get behind to accomplish all of these disparate things that we're trying to accomplish. But that can't happen unless that option is available, which is one of the reasons I decided to run, to be that option. Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't, but the option has to be there.
You've got 7 months to pull it
right out. I know. Hey, Chewy had 3 and he damn near did it, so I got double the time.
All right, you got that. Is Bernie going to come to town for you? Are you reaching out to him?
I've already had a one-on-one sit down with Bernie. I had that sit down 3 months ago, I want to say. Not far from here, actually, over at the Sheraton. You know, Bernie is interested in his endorsements because he almost always waits until like the last week or so, you know, with Marie Newman, who almost defeated Lipinski. Mm-hmm. She got his endorsement like the last week of the campaign. It would have helped.
You need to tell Bernie, we need people to win, not just come in really close. So how about we get this out a little earlier, maybe come to town.
Right.
Talk a little bit. And
hey, I had my meeting. I made my pitch, and I was told that he was impressed. But he told me he wants to keep talking, and so we'll keep talking.
It's tough because, I think a lot of Chicagoans want change, and we hope for things. But man, you got a lot of people to win over. You know, you've got so much money going to the other side, to Rahm, and then you've got all these people within the campaign. And you know, you're this young, brash, audacious young man with not like a certain community organizer we knew here in Illinois years ago, but you somehow got to make that leap forward. And I don't know how you make that next step. You're running a campaign, but other than doing things like this and getting out as much as you can, is it consuming your life right now? Trying to hit the ground as much as you can while still running your job as the head of the principals?
You know, it hasn't changed it to the degree you might imagine, because my job has always been, it's like doing what I've always done on another level. Well, not always, what I've been doing for the last 5 years. You know, I made a decision to risk my career 5 years ago because I saw resources being taken away from not just my school, but schools. I was in a wealthy community. My kids were going to be okay, but schools across the city. And I decided to risk my career to call out the corrupt politicians who were doing it. You know, people may not remember this, but you know, we have CEOs in prison,
right?
Barbara Bird Bennett. What people may not know, that the first and only public school employee to speak out against her when she was at the height of her power before the federal investigation, the first and only public school employee to do that was myself. That I saw that I became an educator to help kids realize their human potential. And my district was being ran by an administration that was stealing the resources we needed to do that. Right. And so I made it my life goal to call out that corruption and help the public to understand how this corruption worked and how we can stop it. And so that's what I've been doing for 5 years. So the mayoral campaign basically lifts up the platform by which I can do that. And I think interestingly enough, you know, that's why Bernie ran for president. You know, I talked to one of the four people who was in the room when they decided they were going to try and recruit Bernie to run. They had no idea that they would come as close as they did. They wanted to raise these. They just basically wanted to use the presidential campaign and Bernie Sanders as a way to uplift and create a platform for many of the, you know, far left issues.
That don't get much play.
That don't get much play.
Yeah.
Like free. And now, guess what? We're still talking about free college tuition because of that campaign.
Yeah.
Something that wasn't even in the public dialogue. And so I think we can do the same thing here. Unlike them, though, I think we can win. From the beginning, this hasn't been just an issue only thing for me. I actually think we can win. But to get back to your question, it hasn't changed a lot in the sense that I've always used every ounce of spare time I could to uplift the public consciousness about the corruption of this administration, to put forth a different vision for what our school system can look like and our city can look like. Because as a principal, you know, I actually saw the impact, not just of the corruption in our school system, but in the city and the failure of the city. My kids, you know, I have the interesting distinction of having been an assistant principal in the poorest neighborhood in the city and a principal in the richest neighborhood in the city, residential neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I got to see my kids at Johnson in North Lawndale come to school on day one of kindergarten, 2-3 years behind my kids at Blaine. Now it's day one of kindergarten and they're already behind. How is Johnson a failing school? And they're already behind on day one of kindergarten. They haven't been to school. They've been failed long before they ever reached the school system. So as principal, I'm seeing the failure of the city to get its housing policy straight, because these part of that failure is housing instability. I'm seeing the failure of the city in dealing with lead paint, because if you live in North Lawndale, your chances of being exposed to lead paint are 1 out of 4. But if you live in Lincoln Park or Lakeview, your chances are 0. Right. And so I'm seeing how that exposure to lead paint impacts, because that impacts the cognitive functioning, your brain.
Right.
Right. And I'm seeing that as assistant principal in North Lawndale, I have to deal with some things that a principal in Lakeview doesn't have to deal with. Right. I'm seeing the impact of lack of access to adequate nutrition, the impact of exposure to violence. I'm seeing how the city's failure is impacting these schools, and the ironic, tragic, ironic twist is that the people responsible for the city's failure of these children then pin their failure on the school system. And so, again, as mayor or as a mayoral candidate, that's one of the issues that I feel I tried to uplift as a principal when I was talking about the corruption in the district. I also wanted to uplift that issue. As a mayoral candidate, I think I can uplift the public consciousness and raise public awareness about the impact of the failure that takes place before, of our city's failure, one that takes place before kids ever reach kindergarten. And I need to deal with that failure.
Will there be debates?
I would imagine there are going to be debates. There's actually been a few forums, no debates. I mean, that's up to the folks that organize debates. I know I'll show up. I've actually had a, you know, when I look at Rahm, he's been so corrupt. I almost don't want to legitimize him as a mayor with my presence. I'm serious, man. I don't understand how he's still mayor. I don't understand how you can get caught manipulating crime statistics. And I don't know how this didn't make huge news. It was front page Chicago Magazine. But the mainstream media didn't pay any attention to it. In order to make the murder rate look like it was going down, they began to classify murders as non-criminal death investigations. So, for example, there's a woman found bound and gagged not far from North London in a warehouse. Dead. They classified that not as a murder, but as a non-criminal death investigation in order to make it look like the murder rate was going down. They did this repeatedly. Now, the crime here, not just is just in manipulating the statistics, but when you classify, when you don't classify it as a murder, guess what doesn't happen?
Investigation.
That's right. You get no murder investigation, which means the person that committed that murder goes free. And in at least two cases, they knew who it was, but couldn't charge them because they wouldn't classify it as a murder because that would heighten the murder statistics. Right. And so you already have someone who had gotten so used to protecting murderers and letting people get away with murder that by the time Laquan McDonald happened, he had let so many ordinary people get away with murder. It must have been nothing for him to let a police officer get away with murder. Like, how do you do? And one of the things, like, how do you do that? And you're still mayor, right? How do you do that?
Because people don't talk about it. Because you're right, it doesn't get covered in the way that you're talking about it. And you have to get out on stage with him to bring these things up to him, to make him answer to that.
I likely will, but I just wanted to make my point that I'm so disgusted that he's so illegitimate to me that the inclination is to not want to legitimize his position with my presence. The likelihood is that he'll be too cowardly to show up.
Yeah.
Particularly with a debate with me. I know he's paid attention and he knows he can't win. I'm pretty certain. But, you know, if he's dumb enough to do it, I'll give him a ride.
The website is troyforchicago.com. Troy LaRavier running for mayor of Chicago. Got 7 months to pull this together and make it happen. I wish you the best of luck. I appreciate that you are a man who, you know, you're very entrepreneurial. Even though you work in a system in the public schools and things like that, you're willing to take a risk. You spoke out when it could cost you your job. You've taken jobs where you have to fight back. And, you know, you're willing to take risks, even though I think you have the confidence in yourself that, you know, if you get fired because you spoke out, I'll find another way to make a living. And that's right. Okay. And I think we need a little more of that. Like you said, people get into office and protect themselves and insulate themselves and make sure that they have their cushion set up. I bet you don't have a big cushion set up. And that's okay, because you're a good man who's going to find work no matter what you do. And so keep speaking out and keep preaching the truth, and let's see where you can get.
Thanks, Matt, man. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
It's always good to have you in studio. Troy LaRavier, everybody. Troyforchicago.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Troy LaRavier as well. Quick break, and news is next, 720 WGN.